Early holiday savings have arrived at Tanger Outlets. Discover the best gifts from your favorite brands, perfect for everyone on your list. And stack your savings with up to 70% off, plus an extra 15 to 25% off only during Tanger Style. Save at Polo Ralph Lauren, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, Skechers, J.Crew Factory, and more. Hurry in. These early holiday deals last through November 24th. Tanger Outlets. More savings, more cheer.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own.
Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 340 of the Outlander podcast. I am Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Welcome to episode 425 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Catherine H.
And now, on to our read-along. Nobody asked, but I have 7 hours left of this book to listen to, so we're getting close to the end. We're starting part six, entitled Coming Home. And the first chapter of that part is chapter 71, entitled A State of Conflict.
I did my best on these chapters to, as I have been trying to do, whittle it down to just the things that happened, maybe something funny. If I'm trying to rush a little bit, the funny may be skipped. But anyway, this chapter wasn't so bad, but the next one, I think, oh my God, just, well, and then, and then the last one. Chapters two and the second and fourth chapter in this read along, It was not easy. Anyway, yes, September 10th, 1777. Lord John wrote to Jamie at the Ridge a month ago to see if Claire, and of course he would come too, he and Claire could come so she could do surgery on his nephew, Henry. He would pay for all of the trip, get them reimbursed for any of their expenses, and as well as get them a boat to get more quickly up the coast once they got to the coast. He even got some vitriol so she could make her ether. But this month later, he had just received word that the Frasers had left the Ridge to go to Scotland. He'd also had, because he still, yes, his goal was to get Claire there, but in the meantime, he finally had Dr. Rush looking on Henry, but he didn't have anything new to recommend or share about his health status. He did say he believed Henry was strong enough to withstand another surgery. So that is good news. Whoever ended up doing it, at least he thought it was, you know, still a good chance he would survive it. He thinks hard, Lord John, about whether or not he should try to get Henry on a ship to England before it's too late that year to travel by boat. He'd gotten Henry's parole granted just in case, or he'd applied for it to be granted, but he hadn't managed to have Henry exchanged yet, which means I think to have an American person released from the prison. I don't know, something to do with an exchange. He had to get that managed and in order to take him freely to England. He finally decided to take his chances with Dr. Rush. He is going to make plans to, or he's making plans to, like, fine, I'll ask him to do the surgery. Just then, Dottie bursts in saying how Howe's troops were advancing on the city. By the way, I realized at this point that since it just said Dottie bursted in, like, okay, so this is his house. He's not staying with Henry. So Henry is at Mrs. Mercy Woodcock's house. Their house is different from the house that he rents, which is the house on Chestnut Street. So I had thought that I was confusing the two or conflating the two. They're not. They're well and truly separate. So the Brits had won a battle at Paoli, and that's why they were entering the city. And after spending the day at Mrs. Woodcock's, making sure as the troops were marching in that all was well and that their house, that the house was safe for her, but also for Henry, he returns to his house on Chestnut Street.
And that was chapter 71, moving along to chapter 72, entitled The Feast of All Saints.
Lallybroch, October 20th, 1980. Bree is rereading a letter that she and Roger had opened and read the night before. She believes that she can still catch some of the scent of the Ridge from the paper. The letter had been written November 1st, 1777, so just about a month and a half after we left Lord John in the previous chapter, which is All Saints' Day.
Claire was writing from Wall Street in New York. They are well, she says. Jamie was slightly wounded at the first Battle of Saratoga, and she'd removed his finger. One of the fingers, obviously. We all know what it was. They are about to finally travel to Scotland. They're able to do so pretty darn safely because they are accompanying the body of one Brigadier General Simon Fraser to be laid to rest in Scotland. So the general in the colonies, the general had been buried for a week and then he had to be exhumed for transport. Oh, it gets better. Ian, we got a strong, not even a hint. It was told straight up last week, but examples were given basically. Ian is in love with a Quaker lass. This is but further in the letter, right? Ian is in love with a Quaker lass named Rachel Hunter. Rollo had been shot, but he was okay. And Rachel is looking after him. Since Ian was not able to show himself in public since he had committed a technical murder, they are kind of sneaking him aboard the boat to Scotland, or that they'll have to. XOXO mama. P.S. your father will add some words. Jamie's words are, William is alive and unwounded. He won't fight again. P.S. It's All Saints. Please pray. Thanks. Please pay for me. Thanks.
I mean, to be fair, it's a little late to pray for him.
No, if you know about, I don't know the correct term, but if you know about, I don't think it's necessarily Catholic theology, but Catholic something, something. So it's their, maybe doctrine. I don't think it's a doctrine. Anyway, something about Catholic belief, their belief system is that, God and anyone who has died is outside of space and time. And they also believe in the communion of the saints, which is why they ask for the prayers of saints. So they ask saints to pray for them because they believe that someone who has died in God and Christ, who's going to heaven, whatever, that they are already in heaven and thus they can not answer prayer, but they can pray for them. So they're not appealing to them for miracles, although I know that language you do hear sometimes. They're basically asking a saint to intercede. Saint Cuthbert, pray for me, because they believe since they're closer to God, they're in heaven, their prayer might have more merit or, you know, might be more effective.
Right. But was he not asking his children to pray for him?
Yes, yes, yes. My point is that because he knew very well that the time that she would read it, if she got it, he'd be dead. His best hope, if he wasn't in heaven, his hope was to be in purgatory, because every soul in purgatory eventually makes it to heaven. That is Catholic belief. It's just they have I believe venial sins that have to be like purged in the fire, whatever that means. But in case he's still in purgatory at the time she's reading this letter, first of all, if she prays for him and he's already in heaven, it may not help, but it doesn't hurt, right? If he's in purgatory, according to his belief and their belief, and she does pray for him, then it can help, they believe. And I don't think I wrote it down, but there is a belief that, and what she had learned in Catholic school is that if you pray for a soul on All Souls, one soul can be released from purgatory, something like that, for a certain prayer. So my point is, number one, if you're dead and you're in purgatory, prayer can benefit.
Yeah, but he's going to be there for 200 years.
Or something like that, yeah. But
before
again,
anyone prays for him.
Outside of time and space. So that's why they believe prayers can help or can benefit those who have passed. Every time. So Roger calls her from the kitchen. And something is up. The kids are with Annie in the village with getting, excuse you, away now. Thank you. The kids are away with Annie in the village getting ice cream. Brianna enters the kitchen and sees the man, William Buckley McKenzie, a.k.a. the Nucklevy, and he wants their help. She realizes that this was the guy who'd gotten Roger hanged. She threatens to hit him, and Roger urges her to go for his balls.
I know, but I'm like, the fact that they're both standing there not killing each other should have been all that she needed to know. They've clearly worked it out, somewhat. She just wants to punch him in the balls because she wants revenge?
I mean, she does want revenge.
Well, yeah.
For what he did.
But I mean, it doesn't make it better.
No, but it might make her feel better.
Sure.
For a minute.
But I mean, to be honest, isn't it bad enough he's had to travel through time and has no idea what he's doing and didn't have anyone to help him? That seems like punishment enough.
For having her husband hanged? No, not quite. But it is definitely punishment. But it's definitely a bad thing. So Willie B tells them that he'd stolen to feed himself and that ultimately he'd gotten help from a reverend and he'd gotten clothing and a job through a...
He sounds like Jean Valjean.
A charity. Roger's like, why don't you tell us what happened, start back in the colonies. So he starts with North Carolina. Roger starts to say, hey, did you know that it was you who'd asked me to save your child on the ship crossing from Scotland to North Carolina? That was me.
And then do you know that you made me get hung? Do you feel like a big man?
Oh, they've already been over that, but yeah. So Willie B says that when they got to he and his family got to North Carolina, he wasn't much of a farmer or a builder or a hunter. So they were skint. They had absolutely nothing. They had nothing. So he took his family to a turpentine plantation where he could find some work. His boss on the plantation became a regulator. So he, Willie B, and others went as well. And he had his wife and child come with him for their safety. It would not have been safe for them to stay behind because of a certain dude. So this is why, just before the Alamance or before those battles, that this is why Morag and the kid were there with him. And he pauses and, yeah, they need some booze. Roger brings out the genealogical table of the reverends. Willie B had heard of the Dunbonnet, of course, Bree's father, and we find out he'd been a lawyer before leaving Scotland. Roger shows Willie B the table, and he asks, how in the heck? What happened? How did you come here? How did you time travel? And Willie B says, after Alamance, we had drifted for a time. We had nowhere to go. Finally, we decided, you know what? We need to go back, really strongly consider going back to Scotland. So they were going to be able to stay with and work for Morag's brother. So they went back and landed in Edinburgh, and they make their way north. Their wagon broke down conveniently near Craignadun. Because he has no practical skills, he couldn't help the guy who was working on the wagon, so he goes for a walk to get some air. And he walks up to the hill, where the stones are. And it just happens to be near Midsummer's Day. Just at this point in his story, the kids come home with Annie. Because the kids would know Willie B as the Knucklevy, obviously they don't want to be freaked out by him yet. They want to be able to plan something to say about why this man's there. So they put him in the priest's hold. Why he was present at all, why he was in their house right now, and why the person who scared them they allowed in the house. So they put him in the priest's hold and they get ready for the kids, but it wasn't the kids. It ends up being Rob Cameron, who can't get the F away. So as she was on her way to answer the door, thinking it was the kids, she picked up the genealogical table and was going to drop it on Roger's desk. So Rob Cameron came back because he said he was bringing back a book to return that Roger had lent him. And he asks, hey, would Jem like to go see a movie with Bobby this Friday? And we can have dinner afterwards and he can spend the night. Bree says, sure. Annie arrives with the kids just then. And since Rob had stayed so long that it was dinner time, they would have to invite him to stay. Otherwise, it would be rude. They eventually get the kids to bed and Roger and Rob talk on. Finally, Rob leaves and they get Willie B out of the hold. They feed Willie B. Brianna asks if he wants to go back to his wife, to his family. He says yes. And they find out he's 38 years old. And Brianna remembers that while not all of the birth and death dates were on that genealogical table, his was one of the people whose dates were there, and she knew that he would die, according to that table, at the age of 38. So he would not meet his next birthday. And now we are able to call him Buck. I'm able to call him Buck. It's a lot easier than Willie B. Too many Williams. Roger, they plan to keep talking, yes, but it was late. He makes him up a bed near his office. And the next day, Roger had dropped him off near the lock, or if I have the pronunciation right, Loch Aracty, while Bree's at work. And the plan was that once she was off work, she would drive him back home. So she and Brianna and Buck chat a bit. Buck, that after he'd gone through, he was understandably wary of the stones, hence him not going right back to them to walk right back through because he was scared. He didn't know immediately what had happened. He did eventually, however, return to them, and this time he heard the buzzing, and it scared him, but he still tried to walk through the cleft. But the next thing he knew, he was lying on the grass, and he was literally on fire. And he said, after that, I did not try again. I was scared. I mean, if I burst into flames, I would not do that again either.
So does this mean that everyone gets like a one shot without lighting on fire, except for Roger?
Well, no, because when Claire went back on accident, that was her one shot. She went forward. She didn't burn.
Because it looks like Buckley, whatever, fell through with no anything and was on fire when he tried to go back through. Yeah.
And purposely tried to go back. Yeah. And then who knows? So what they planned was that Roger, so Bria goes to work the next morning. Roger drives Buck to Lake Loch Aracty so he can hang out. He's like for the day, whatever. And when Bree's off work or that evening, she will drive him back home. But as they're chatting along the river, up comes the most welcome person you always want to welcome, Rob Cameron. He invites them out for a drink. And she's like, sorry, can't. By the way, this is okay. This is Buck. He's Roger's relative. Come for a visit. That's Rob. And Buck notices something while he's there. And after Rob walks away, he tells Bree, watch out for that one. He has a hot eye for you.
I mean, everyone in the series kind of does, don't they?
For Bree?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because she's always got pants on. Everyone's looking at her. And that was Chapter 72. Moving along to Chapter 73, entitled One Ewe Lamb Returns to the Fold.
November 24th, 1777, back in Philadelphia. Lord John believes he needs a valet, but he also needs a surgeon. He goes to visit General Howe to beg the use of an army surgeon. And as he's out, he runs into William. He takes him aside and takes him inside and has food prepped for him, welcomes him. And of course, they meet. William sees Dottie there and they embrace, blah, blah, blah. Now, a little word. He gives us a little aside. Where Diana does. A little word about Beauchamp. He's gone from Philadelphia, so Lord Grey can't follow his movements any longer. Someone else will have to do that. When he takes in William's meal to him, he sees that he and Dottie are looking at each other. They look very strange. Not the same way. When they first met, they looked like so happy to see each other, and he thought, oh, maybe they do have feelings for each other. But now it's like completely different. And William tells of his experiences of recent months of the battles, Dottie grows worried, and Dottie's growing worried from hearing William, and Lord John grows more proud hearing about his experiences and what he's done. William says, oh, I know an army surgeon, but he's American. I will need leave just to go get him or ask him.
He's like, I know a guy. It's a good guy. We should go get him. He's got a hot sister. She's his nurse.
Yeah. And we could like bring them both back, you know.
It'd be nice.
The name of the surgeon, of course, we all know is Denzel Hunter. I'll never get
Denzel
that.
Denzel Washington. It's Denzel Washington.
That would be pretty awesome.
And that was a short chapter. So moving right along to the longest chapter of the bunch and the last of Read Along, chapter 74, entitled 2020.
Well, I will tell you something about 2020 and not the year. I had my annual eye appointment yesterday, and in how she has you just bare naked eye, like read the thing. Cover one eye, read the thing.
I was like, she's never had me bare naked in the back.
Naked eyeball. Read one with one eye and then read again with the other eye. And she's like, okay. And then I tried it with just my current glasses because she wanted to see what, you know, see what I could see with my current glasses. And then we tried something else. But anyway, as I told her at some point, maybe not with my current glasses, maybe with the glasses she was trying to like, oh, she had gotten to another prescription or she tweaked it. Summer and I, our whole family basically has the same optometrist. And she has, it's so cute, the term she uses for just like giving you a tiny little squeak of an improvement, she calls it a boost. She's like, I'm just going to boost you a little bit. She's like, what do you think of this? If I just boosted it, what do you think? Let's try this eye and that eye. And so I'm reading all the things and I'm like, man, I can't even see the bottom line for that. She's like, oh, well, that's great. But, you know, just so you know, you don't need to. That's not 2020. That's beyond. That's like people who are like showing off, but naturally.
She's like, I'm not going to boost you that far.
Oh, no, the boost
did
it.
We have to keep you human and humble.
Summer. December 20th, 1777, Edinburgh. So that is the one thing. I'm not complaining because it sounds like it was actually probably a pretty boring journey, which for Jamie and Claire is a good thing, right? But it's interesting how we get pretty in-depth descriptions of their adventure, of their journeys everywhere, but on their different ships from Scotland to France, and then on to Jamaica, and then on to the New World, or that is the New World, and then on to they land in Georgia, and then on their first attempts to go to Scotland more recently, we get Zip-a-Doodle Squat Knuckle Monkey.
They know better.
About
nothing
this
good happens on a boat.
Diana, no, my point is Diana gives us Diddle. And the whole reason we get Diddle is because nothing happened. Again, which is, for them, that's heaven, right? Because we know how bad their luck is on
It's heaven for all
ships.
Of us, but because it was boring to write about, she didn't write about it, so.
Well, like, I don't mind reading boring about them, because they're still going to be do stuff.
You're right, but you know what's going to happen? If she writes a chapter about being on a boat, something bad's going to happen.
Oh, Sam.
It's true. Something bad always happens when she writes about being on a boat.
So they're in Edinburgh, and Jamie and Claire are getting glasses and eventually some clothing made before heading to the Highlands with the body. Young Ian has headed off to the brothel of old to see if Madame Jeanne still owns it. If so, Jamie can get all the hot goss from her. Andy Bell, who is the printer...
And that better be all he gets from her.
Yep. Andy Bell, who is the printer, they are there to see and talk to about... And who's been babysitting Jamie's Bonnie for the last 12 years, is sleeping because, as Jamie says, printers are known... Like, their world... Not their work, as in their labor, as in using the printing press. Using a printing press, I mean... It's great if you do it in the daylight because you have light, but, you know, you can use, you know, candlelight or torches or whatever. Like, you know, you can technically do that any time of day. But as far as meeting with people and making your deals, like, their customers and their hot goss, the stuff that they do, they really need to be part of society and be around and talking to people. And that happens in the evenings to later nights, right? So that's why Jamie's like, he won't even wake up till afternoon probably. So we're not going to, there's no point in going to try and talk to him now, but we can go to the print shop just to see if Richard's there. So they go to the print shop and luckily it had not burned down. And they ask for Richard Bell, who was, I think, the dude who answered the door. And so that's him. Jamie tells him that his wife had sent word that his wife and his daughters would like him to return to the colonies. And he is, of course, very happy that they're well, happy that they're safe. Then Jamie sees that the other Bell had indeed been using his own press. So he wasn't just babysitting it. He was freaking ticking using it. And he can tell because his name's on it. And also, I think one of the letters was a certain way or something like that. So they go have lunch at this restaurant while they're waiting for Andy Bell. Jamie tells Claire that he plans to send Richard home He's going to go home to his family, but he plans to send Richard home with his printing press to make sure, like, to babysit it, to make sure it gets there safely.
Is he going to use it on the boat like everyone else seems to keep just using it?
The printing press?
Yeah.
Who uses
it? Can you say that printer was using his printing press?
In Edinburgh.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if he used it, who's to stop the next person from using it? Is he going to be printing stuff on a boat?
The difference is Andrew Bell was already a printer. Richard is not. Now, he may have learned stuff from his brother since he's been there, but he's not by trade a printer. You need to know, or at least have been taught how to use it to be able to make use of it. Then Andy Bell arrives. Jamie calls him to come on over and they chat. And yes, there's a whole bunch of stuff about he has the biggest schnoz that Claire's ever seen. But again, that's not a thing. That's entertainment, but that's not a thing.
But then he put something on top of it. Like, he made it even more.
He's making fun of himself. Yeah. Ian was waiting for them back at their hotel. When they get there, they go up to their room and have supper and chat. So Jamie plans on taking the printing press somewhere in New England. So once he's back, he plans on taking the printing press somewhere to New England and working as a printer until the end of the war. Ian says he has picked up some French lace for his mother. And he confirms that Madame Jeanne is indeed still there. And Jimmy says, oh, great. Well, I'll go see her in the morning. Ian says, he tells them that I won't go, meaning to go, you know, screw with the whore. I'm not going to go with a whore until it's settled between me and Rachel. And Claire's like, oh, so you're serious. You feel betrothed to Rachel. And Jamie butts in and says, of course he does, Sassenach. He left her his dog.
It's true.
It is true. That's the next best thing to a ring or something. The next day, Claire's...
I bet that dog is pissed.
Claire goes shopping and runs some other errands, including picking up her glasses and to, quote, make arrangements for the deposition of the cache of letters we had accumulated since Fort Ticonderoga, unquote. Does that ring any bells for you, Sam?
No.
Okay. So all the letters that Roger and Bree have been reading up to this point.
Oh, are you talking about the books?
They are what Claire had to go make arrangements to drop off in various places. What I'm trying to say is all the letters that they have read or have yet to read are done. Like, they're with the Fraser's. She's about to put them in storage, basically, and make plans for them to be sent on in the future. When she gets back to the hotel, a worker comes to her and says, General Fraser is leaking.
I'm sorry.
You heard me and you read it.
She's leaking?
Yep. She has to go take care of it. So she's like, ugh. She sends for Andy Bell to see if he wants to observe something medical since he has experience with, you know, he had... produced a book, probably several books printed several books about obstetrics. It was about certain.
It was a woman's pelvis.
Yeah. So certain, he had either, well, he printed it anyway. I don't know if he actually did the work, but he printed the book. She also wants to know if there's a blacksmith they could hire on the down low who could do some work and patch the lining of the coffin. The coffin apparently had come apart. It was a lead coffin, but it had, at least part of it had come apart. And Bell recommends, as far as, you know, taking, because he's like, we could boil down the body and just make it into some stuff or burn it down or something and just like put the remnants back in, but it would be lighter and all that. And she's like, yeah, this is my husband's kin. I don't think he'd like that. So Bell recommends maggots to help get the flesh off. So at least there'd be less, there would be less or no oozing, right? So this itself would take the maggot process takes another 3 or 4
days. Maggotry?
Maybe. Takes about three or four more days. So Madame Jeanne had stuff to say about Percy Beauchamp. Well, that seems to us pretty rando, right? It's like everywhere they go, people know of Percy. She says that he comes to her place every so often, and he brings her lots of stuff from France. Someone back at the hotel is guarding the general's body because, as Summer and many of you may know, this is the height. I don't know when it started exactly, but it's definitely at the end of the 18th century and beginning of the 19th century, but this is the high time for body snatching. And Edinburgh is a center of body snatching.
They have a whole interactive walkthrough museum about called Edinburgh Dungeons.
I need to go to that. I didn't make it. So they have someone guarding the body, even though it's an oozy body. You never know. But they have someone guarding the body just in case. And Andy Bell had suggested that Claire write a medical book. Nothing too detailed as far as, you know, nothing that would be, the audience would not be fellow doctors. The audience would be lay people, Hausfrau. The audience would be wives, mothers, anyone at home, like things they could do in the home. So for the layman, basically. And or a manual for regular people is how he puts it, not for doctors. And he promises to print 300 copies and do a list of other things in return for the 12 years of rent that he owes Jamie for the printing press. And he's not even charging for the maggots.
Exactly.
Jamie and Ian, meanwhile, go to France to take care of some stuff for, I think, Madame Jeanne, and to look into some stuff. And while they're gone, someone comes to see her. To see Claire at the hotel. Of course it's Percy.
He gets around, man.
I'm telling you. He says he's been looking for her. He has a proposition for Jamie, and he would have told him, but of course he's out of the country. So he tells her all about Fergus and Leconte. Brass tacks. He and others of the same interest in France want the rebellion in America to succeed. That company we'd heard of, I'm going to say it wrong probably, but Hortale et Compagnie, I think, is the...
Don't ask me.
Not the abstraction, the Abkürzung. When you have a word and you make it shorter.
Abbreviation.
Yes, thank you. What the abbreviation is for is CIE. I believe it's Compagnie, but I could be wrong because I have no clue about French abbreviations, except SVP or RSVP. That company was a facade company to funnel money to the Americans without having to involve the French government. Percy is a French intelligence agent. He wants her to tell Jamie and suggest that it is in the interest of Fergus to pursue this, but also in the interests of America. Quote, the Comte Saint-Germain had extensive land holdings in a part of America that is currently held by Great Britain. The French part of his estate, currently being squabbled over by a number of claimants, is extremely valuable. If Fergus Fraser can be proved to be Claudel Racosi, the Racosi is the family name, you understand, and the heir to this fortune, he would be able to use it to help in financing the revolution. From what I know of him and his activities, and I know a good deal by this time, I think he would be amenable to these aims. If the revolution is successful, then those who backed it would have substantial influence over whatever government is formed. Unquote. Before he leaves, she asks him if he has children. And he says, I shouldn't think so.
And that was chapter 74. Join us next time when we will be continuing our A Breath of... not A Breath of Snow and Ashes. We finished that one. Join us next time and we will be discussing and continuing our An Echo in the Bone read-along with chapter 75, Sic Transit Gloria Mundi, 76, By the Wind Grieved, 77, Memorare, I think you said, Ginger.
Memorare,
okay. 78, Old Debts, 79, The Cave.
Again, a special thanks to this episode's co-producer, Catherine H. To find out more about how you can support us on Patreon, visit outlanderpod.com/Patreon.
And if you're looking for more people to talk to Outlander about, talk about Outlander with, please join us at our group at www.outlanderpod.com/group. And if you're interested in any Outlander Pod branded merch, please visit our shop at www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
If you haven't subscribed to our newsletter, the Outlander Pod Gazette, please do. Find us at outlanderpod.com/newsletter. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.